If your day sounds like...
We need the report ASAP.
You deserve Modelo. If you've persevered through... You deserve this rich golden lager with a crisp but refreshing taste. Or if you overcame...
Two more.
You deserve this ice-cold reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at Cenovus.com.
Menards is your electrical headquarters. We carry all the tools and testers you need for any electrical job. Stack up your toolbox with Southwire electrical products today. Right now, save big money on Southwire electrical tools, testers, cable ties, wire, and cable. Shop our huge selection in-store at Menards. Ranked number one in customer satisfaction among home improvement retailers according to J.D. Power. For more information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Save big money at Menards.
Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo. The podcast that you know.
Emergency podcast time. Deuce and Mo. It is a Friday night, Memorial Day weekend. Didn't think we'd be having some Kings news to discuss, but... of course we got some.
Of course.
Right when we're sitting down to watch game two of the Western Conference Finals, mm-hmm. we get a Woj alert. And I saw Mike Brown's picture. My first reaction was like,
They did it!
The extension got done! And I'm like, let's go! And I read it, and I felt like my heart sank a little bit. Mm-hmm. Woj put out a report. After engaging in contract extension negotiations, the Sacramento Kings and coach Mike Brown remain with a golf. On a potential deal and have table talks, according to ESPN. Went on to write, Brown has one guaranteed season left on his original four-year contract, and there has been hope of reaching a deal that would avoid him entering the final year of his contract in the 24-25 season. So, Morgan Reagan, your first reaction to this, which is a Friday afternoon little news dump thing.
Yeah. First reaction, because the game was about to start, and you and I have been watching these games to, you know, talk about after. And for you and I, we are locked in. We're taking notes during the game. And it took me out of the game. It took me out of the first quarter. I didn't give a shit what was going on. I just felt dead inside. And I know this is, nobody got fired. Nothing horrible happened. But it wasn't fun.
It's triggering though, right?
It's triggering because this shit has happened to me, not to anyone else, but to me for so long now. Obviously, it's happened in this Kings organization for quite some time. And it's traumatizing. Like, just let somebody have stability. Let somebody,
let the fans
have stability. Like, I'm triggered. I'm even just right now, like, it doesn't make me feel good. And I was feeling good after that game too, and now I'm back talking about this and it doesn't feel good.
Well, let's rewind a little bit, because we found out at the end of the season that Mike Brown and the Kings have a mutual option for the final year of his deal. And based on some of the new coaching salaries and based on some of Mike Brown's success, 94 wins as Kings head coach in two seasons, he's looking at that going, I want a little bit of a raise. I'm seeing what other coaches are getting.
Sure.
So it looked like there could be some talks ongoing. I asked Mike Brown about it at the exit interviews and saying, is this top of mind for you right now? And he kind of brushed it aside, but you knew it was going to be a topic headed in to the offseason.
Yeah.
I'm going to preface what I'm about to say with this. I think they're going to get a deal done.
Okay.
And negotiating like this just happens, right? Like you find out that he's got an option thing, and then you find out this today. It feels like there's maybe a little public pressure being put on. I don't know for sure. Obvious. Is this by Mike Brown's camp? I'm guessing.
Yes. We're not. Come on. Don't be naive, people.
But we did. We talked about this earlier this week. Just get a deal done.
Just get a deal done.
And
any deal.
I think there is definitely some people that would say this. Well, I made the playoffs 1 year, got coach of the year, but they didn't make the playoffs last year. They took a step back. Like, why can't he come into next year and prove it? Look, man, let me just walk you through a trip down.
I'll drink my wine. You walk us through.
So the Kings are getting ready to start their 40th season in Sacramento. Mm-hmm. They have had 21 head coaches since 1985.
Triggered.
21 head coaches since 1985. That's more than any other team in the NBA during that span.
Jesus.
Phil Johnson.
Oh, are you gonna name the 21 coaches?
Phil Johnson.
Okay.
Jerry Reynolds, Bill Russell, Dick Motta, Rex Hughes, Gary St. Jean, Eddie Jordan, Rick Adelman, Eric Musselman, Reggie Theus, Kenny Natt, Paul Westphal, the late great Paul Westphal, okay. Keith Smart, Michael Malone, Ty Corbin, George Karl, Dave Yeager, Luke Walton, and Mike Brown.
That's only 20. Oh, wait, that's 10, 15, 19. That was only 19. You missed two.
I said it with confidence, though.
Like, if I wasn't counting, I'd have been like, whoa, that was 21.
Can I be honest? What? I feel like your counting's off.
No. Go back. If you do it again, I'll let you do it again even. But like when I didn't, I put a finger.
Did I say Kenny Natt?
Yeah.
Okay, now I'm going to look it up. And see, this is what's great. We're going to do this live.
Not really live, but not going to stop recording. I'm very confused on why you were so confident if you didn't have it. Okay.
I said Jerry Reynolds.
You did.
I said Dick Motta.
Maybe not.
Dude, I didn't say Dick Motta.
Yeah.
I didn't say Dick Motta. That was the one I missed. Why I said Rex Hughes, Gary St. Jean, Eddie Jordan, Rick Adelman, Eric Musselman, Reggie Theus, Kenny Natt, Paul Westphal, Keith Smart, Michael Malone, Ty Corbin.
Alvin Gentry. You missed Alvin. Watch it. All right. Those are the two. Hey, at least we went back and those are the two that you missed.
I'm the basketball mind and I forgot it. And so here's the point.
It's too many to remember.
Even Deuce Mason left off Dick Motta and Alvin Gentry.
Even Deuce Mason. But that was still pretty good. But the point is, that is not good.
What? Right. And I've got more on that, Morgan. Reagan.
Okay. Ooh. Let me see.
So 21 coaches during that span.
Mm-hmm.
Four of those coaches have made the playoffs. They've had seven coaches since 2013. The Kings have had 10 winning seasons? 11 winning seasons in their history?
Okay.
11 winning... 10 winning seasons in their history?
Just so much confidence beaming from me. I believe you with it.
But 10. Two coaches with winning records.
Okay.
Rick Adelman, who did it 8 years in a row... And the last two under Mike Brown, 48 wins and then 46 wins short of a playoff appearance this year. You can't do it. You can't. The debate is like, well, do you pay him like some of these other coaches got paid? Well, if you look at some of the highest paid coaches, all these salaries have jumped up for head coaches around the league. It's happening and Correct. It's going to keep happening. Coaches are getting paid more than ever. And in some ways, it makes sense. Because there's no NBA coaching salary cap. The Kings don't get dinged by paying Mike Brown. No team gets dinged by this. Spoelstra's making 15 a year. Steve Kerr's making 17.5. Popovich, 16. Mike Budenholzer just signed with the Suns, $10 million a year. Monty Williams changed everything by getting $13 million a year from the Pistons. And then the one that might be hurting Brown a little bit, Nick Nurse got $8 million a year. He won a championship with the Raptors. He's getting $8 million a year with the Sixers.
So... Yeah, and you talk about that there's no salary cap on these coaches and everything. And I think for these coaches, they're now looking for, wow, these guys get paid a lot of money, but we ultimately will be the ones that get screwed and that all the blame goes on. I mean, Frank Vogel is a great example of what's going on with the Phoenix Suns and his entire coaching staff. And so y'all get screwed, but you don't get the security, the stability to stay in one town, to make all this money, whatever it may be. And so that's all they're fighting for. Now, when it's rich people fighting for more money, I'm always like, ugh, screw you all anyway. But at the same time, like, my point is, I get it. I get it.
And what's it going to take to pay Mike Brown? The reporting out there is saying that he's looking for 8 figures, so 10 or more million a year.
Sure.
You can have a debate. Oh, should they pay him that? Blah, blah. Look, even if it's a little less than that, don't let Mike Brown walk because you don't want to pay him an extra million or something. Like, let's not let this fall apart. I think the reality is this for me with Mike Brown. I just look, he's got those 94 wins. I felt like he has brought a level of accountability to this team. Mm-hmm. I think it's a no-brainer to bring him back and let him see this through. I'd like to see more moves from Monty McNair and see Mike Brown with some additional pieces and see what this team can do again next year. The Kings for years have had a revolving door when it comes to head coaches. Hell, there is a stretch they're paying multiple coaches who they fired, right? I think at one point they're paying like George Karl, Corbin, and Jaeger. That's a lot of money to spend on coaches. I'd rather have a guy that has a respect from the players, that's got results. It hasn't been perfect, and you can be honest about those things, but understand that he has gotten results, and it's not just here. His winning percentage in the NBA is over 600.
And you talk about all that, but you also go back to just the simple thing in sports. Continuity is very important. Now, when it's negative and it's toxic, you don't want to continue that trend. This is the complete opposite of that. This is finally something that you can see going forward can have a positive impact on this entire organization and on the city. And I don't think that's even dramatic to say. I think too, so many people become irrational when there's a little bit of a dip. And it's because we're in sports and you get paid to be the best of the best. Well, 30 teams can't be the best of the best. Like, that's just fact. One. Two, when it comes to an organization, everyone has to be doing their jobs the correct way to make sure that everyone else can do their jobs to the best of their ability. I mean, you look at everything from roster construction, and then you go into the roster and you go, some guys being unhealthy, some guys not playing their best basketball this year and everything. And that's all going to fall on Mike Brown. Again, this isn't about just sticking up for a coach, but it's more about the principle of not only of what Mike Brown, I guess, has brought to Sacramento, but what I still think he can bring as a basketball mind and as a head coach in the NBA.
The other thing too, I feel like there's a little pressure to get this figured out. I mean, I don't know. Does that impact Malik Monk's decision as a free agent? Like, if he's going, well, is Mike staying?
Well,
I mean,
Malik Monk likes
De'Aaron Fox,
Mike Brown. Yes.
How does he feel? Just all those guys. I mean, Sabonis just signed last offseason. Is he going to be like, wait, what? What's, are we unstable? Are the Kings being the old Kings, or is this the new version of the Kings?
And I think that's dangerous.
Important too. And that goes back to the stability and continuity. Yes. And it just, you know, it is reminiscent when you go back to when Michael Malone was here, Rudy Gay signs an extension, and then he was excited because he wanted to play for Michael Malone going forward. And then they blew Malone out the door. You don't want to repeat that same thing. And I think Mike Brown has a respect of the players in the locker room. I think he's a respected coach in this league, and he's gotten results. I'm not trying to paint him as the perfect coach, okay? I'm not far from perfect. But what he has done in a short time, I admire. Even last year, I'm thinking about where the Kings were at defensively.
Yeah.
And them taking a jump with not changing a lot of parts. That's pretty damn impressive. Now, everyone can nitpick rotations. We did it with Mike Brown this
year.
On the podcast, fans did it. Every fan complains about rotations
with
in the NBA.
Every organization.
Yes, sure. So, like, to me, it's whatever. I think The results are simple. Mm-hmm. The Kings have been a losing organization for the majority of their time in Sacramento, and they have finally gotten some level of respectability, even if they're not where they want to be. I want to see this through. This guy won Coach of the Year last year. He won 48 games, followed it up with 46. There's different things going on this year. They don't live up to expectations, but I don't think you just go, I don't know if you're the guy now. It's like you either trust him or you don't trust
him. If things were bad and toxic and he didn't get along with players and star players and blah, 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 these things were going on, I would understand the questioning and being and going away from me saying, hey, continuity is important. But none of those things are happening. So it's like anything in life. You have to grow. You have to develop together, especially when there's positivity within it. Like when you're in a relationship, there's going to be ups and downs, but you
and tough conversations.
But if you have the right pieces and people around to communicate and to try and work through things, then that should be worth going through, because the grass is not always greener. And we have seen that year after year after year. And Deuce, something that you were saying before we came on here was a little bit about like players, like,
oh, I'm so glad you brought this up.
I didn't want to forget
this. And this is something that like, I think we should talk more about.
I agree.
The Kings over the years, and this is not just exclusive to the Kings, but we're using the Kings as the example because we're talking about their coaching situation and the Mike Brown talks. This team paid Dwayne Dedmon $13 million a year.
Remember that?
What did Dwayne Dedmon do for this team?
Absolutely nothing.
Corey Joseph, nice guy.
Kojo, be nice.
You paid him $12 million a year. Yeah, that was a lot of money for Corey Joseph at the
time. Too much money.
You paid Trevor Ariza $12.5 million. You paid Zach Randolph a going away gift, I guess, because it was like his final year in the NBA. Found a couple years in the NBA, over $12 million a year. You paid Vince Carter $8 million a year. Jeez. Who has a bigger impact? Some of these players that we're talking about making that money, or a coach? Mm-hmm. Like you don't throw away like. That, in my opinion, the Kings have made so much progress over the last couple of years, like changing their image. The last thing you want to do is display a level of chaos again, or uncertainty, or like, wait, what's going on?
Or be the punching bag around national media and be like, they can't figure it out. And then like people pick sides and choose narratives. And it's like, can we just get this done?
And so like, what's the solution? I know we did a podcast earlier this week talking about this, and I was like, why not give them like a three-year deal with a, and here's what you could do too. You could put incentives in these deals. Give them a four-year deal, but the final year is a team option. Mm-hmm. So extend them for 3 years, and maybe with certain level of bonuses, he can get well above double figures. Yeah. But maybe it's structured a certain way, right? At the same point, to be fair, we don't know what Mike Brown's asking for.
Absolutely.
What if Mike Brown's asking for, I want to be paid like Greg Popovich? Wow. $16 million. I mean, Greg Popovich got a lot of rings. He got some credibility, or you know, career, or what?
You know
what I'm saying? Like, so we don't know what Mike Brown and his side is asking for, but there's got to be a path for these two sides to stick together and figure it out. Right now, reading this, it bums me out.
It was deflating. It was deflating.
And it's like, nothing technically happened.
No.
But it's out there, right?
And it's, well, it's like you said, it's just being in this city and being part of this organization for so long and following the Kings for so long, it is so triggering that it could probably ruin my entire weekend.
What happens if they get it done this weekend? Then it could make your weekend awesome.
100% get it done.
Also, these are negotiations, and this stuff happens in sports negotiations all the time, where like the sites talk, then it gets out, they put some public pressure on, blah, blah, blah. Going back to it, if you give him that like a 4 year deal and with incentives, it reaches $42 million or something, where you can kind of get him close to where he wants when he meets certain incentives. It can work for both sides. But to me, if I'm the Sacramento Kings, this guy has brought a level of, he's brought culture to the team again. And it's been lacking for a long time. And I think he's got the belief of the guys in the locker room. I want him here.
Well, I think it's funny, too, when people that root on other teams around the league are like, yeah, what has he done? He got this team to one playoffs. Yeah. It's like, oh, sweetie, you're not covering the team. You're not actually seeing it. You're not living it and seeing exactly what is going down. And again, it's not... I get it. I get some people out there and their standards and their irrational thinking is always like championships equal money. But you have to look around the league. You have to get a pulse on what other coaches are getting paid and why he wants to get paid like this. I remember when the reports first came out and Mike Brown wants to get paid, blah, blah, blah. I remember being like, really? And then I took a second before I said anything out loud and put a different narrative out there and was like, actually, yeah, it makes sense why this guy wants to get paid when everyone else is getting paid. You want to make sure that you are protecting yourself as well because coaches are always the first to get blamed, get fired, and go. Yeah,
and I just don't love the idea of a coach going into the final year of his deal as a lame duck coach. Mm-mm. Like, one, it just becomes a constant distraction. Mm-hmm. Players are going to be asked about it. He's going to be asked about it. And let's be honest, everyone's thinking about it. The players are thinking about it. Oh, God, if we get the slow start here, what's that mean for him?
Yeah.
It's like, I think you have to show some level of trust. Did Mike Brown all of a sudden, after winning 48 games and winning Coach of the Year, become a bad coach? No. Like, the West is really good. That's the Kings swung and missed on some things. Mm-hmm. They were injured and they weren't perfect. They didn't have a good year.
Yes.
To their expectations, they still won 46 games, right?
In the Western Conference.
They were one game away from making the playoffs. The goal needs to be to win multiple rounds and turn into a championship contender. But it doesn't all fall on Mike Brown and his coaching staff.
Yeah.
It's about making the right moves. I don't think anyone last year went into the mindset of, in my opinion, I didn't have the mindset. I know Mike Brown said at Media Get A, and I know others did, like, we have championship expectations. They did not have a championship team last year. They had a team that I thought was capable of getting to the playoffs and maybe winning a round.
And by the way, which would have been awesome. It would have been awesome because of just even the experience alone for a lot of these guys. Like, there's so much more you have to do to this entire roster to actually be able to reach some of those championship goals and have those actually be realistic, I guess you could say.
Let's hope they get it done. I mean, the reality is there's a long time before training camp. Mm-hmm. All right. There's months here and they're going to talk again. Let's just hope it gets done. I don't want that distraction. And
I just want to have a good weekend, you know?
Well, it is what it is. There's probably no new news coming. You got to let, this was your chance to like vent and let it out.
I did. I'm drinking wine. I'm venting. I'm fine. But like, I'm just, whatever.
Well, let's just take a deep breath together real fast.
Okay. 3, 2, 1.
He's going to be back. It's going to be back, and we're all going to laugh at this moment. It's going to be fun.
No, you're right.
What?
You're right, because like, I keep wanting to go to like, but I don't want to feel this at all. But it's like, Then don't.
It's just a negotiation, man.
Yeah. Life is like a negotiation, or it is.
It is, man. We're all negotiating every day.
That sounds like an awful life. God, this world sucks.
So we mentioned that we were distracted by this news.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Synovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at synovus.com.
get an 11% rebate at Menards. Rust-Oleum Stops Rust custom 5-in-1 spray paint lets you choose from 5 spray patterns with a twist of the dial. It protects indoor and outdoor metal and wood projects for long-lasting results and is available in more than 40 colors. Get started on your painting project at Menards, number one in customer satisfaction among home improvement retailers according to J.D. Power. For more information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
We did watch Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals, though.
Those Dallas Mavericks. Game 2 Western Conference Finals goes to Dallas 109-108 after Luka buries the game-winning three-pointer. Naz Reid had a good look at the end, but came up short. And the Mavs are up 2-0 after getting two wins in Minnesota. Game 3 in Dallas.
Wow. What a fun ending to the game if you're not a Team Wolves fan. I should preface that because as just an NBA fan, when you get a playoffs game like that and, you know, it's kind of slow in the beginning or toward the second quarter, right? You just feel like, okay, Team Wolves finally figured it out. They're going to
pull away. They're up 18.
Yeah, they're going to pull away. This is what it is. The Mavs go on that run. And then when they go on the run, it never felt like they were actually, okay, oh, they get the lead. Okay, they finally get the lead. And it's toward the end of the game. And then they were just executing so many different things late in this game. And then to have Luka make the biggest shot of the game in that moment, in that fashion. I mean, this is what you watch for.
He was fantastic. And, you know, in the first quarter, everyone's like, oh, he's limping around. He's going back to the locker room at times, coming.
Oh, coming.
Oh. I don't know why I just started choking. Coming back in. Anyway, coming back in.
Yeah.
This guy is just amazing. And they did some interesting things tonight with some double high screens, and that led to him getting some good looks, his teammates getting some good looks. Let's talk about the end of the game.
Thank you. That's where
I want to talk about the end of the game here because it's a situation. It's 108-106.
Mm-hmm.
Ant turns the ball over.
Oh, yeah.
So the Mavs get another look at it. Coming out of the timeout, you're wondering, okay, what's it going to look like? Are they going to leave Gobert in the game? They left Gobert in the game. And I think everybody sitting at home knew what was going to happen. The ball was going to go to Luka or Kyrie, and they were going to try to get Gobert in action to see if they switch because they had been switching. And sure enough, that's what happens.
Yep.
Dallas gets the ball to Luka. Lively comes up to set a screen. McDaniels on Luka. And it seemed like McDaniels just conceded the switch, which allowed Lively to just kind of carry him down into the paint, and it left Luka one-on-one with Rudy Gobert, and man, did he make him dance. Bang! Three in his face, talking shit afterwards. Mm-hmm. It was just a dagger shot. There's a lot of talk about what went down in that final play. Where do you weigh in on what went down?
Thank you. I want to go with a few different things. I think ultimately you look at the coaching and how that final defensive possession was coached or talked about. I mean, that's not what you were supposed to do. Like,
well, let me ask you this.
What?
Let's say you want Gobert on the floor in the situation if you're Chris Finch. Like, that's what fine. You want. How would you have played it differently?
Cross match. Shove Gobert on somebody else. You know.
Derrick Jones Jr. maybe.
You know at this point that Lively is going to set that screen. Now, would the Mavs quickly make adjustments?
Probably.
And go, hey, we're hunting out Gobert either way, so Derrick Jones Jr., Gobert's on you, come set the screen, right? Like, but you still screw with them for a few seconds, and there's 10 seconds left on the game clock out after it's the sideline out of bounds passed into Luka. So it would still make them think, like time would have to run out. So you cross-match Rudy Gobert, let's say that doesn't even happen, right? And you still have Rudy Gobert on Lively. Why not just have McDaniels and Rudy Gobert stay on Luka? Ultimately, the thing that should have been told to these guys in the huddle, do not let Luka take the final shot. Like, even if it's Kyrie, of course, that's not much better. But do not let Luka take this final shot, and do not let him take a three.
If there's a way that you could have blitzed him, and even if Luka finds Derek Lively on the roll, Derek Lively with the ball late in the game, I want a rookie making a decision there.
And the worst that he could do is maybe throw up something to tie it. Maybe he sprays out for a three, but who knows if Minnesota reacts the right way. They get a deflection contested. Who knows what happens? I think they play it the worst way possible. You could even make the case, all right, maybe you have Rudy Gobert off the floor in this situation.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you can bring that up. Maybe they put Kat in or Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and they're just super switchable.
And they go small, even.
But like, in that situation, maybe Luka looks to attack it downhill and...
possibly gets an and one. And or, if he gets the and one situation, then you're obviously going, okay, now they can go up one.
No, but
if he gets the two...
Yeah, then you're maybe going to overtime.
And exactly.
You're right. So... it ends up being so the worst possible scenario. Now, you know, on the post game on TNT, everyone's talking shit about Gobert except Kenny Smith. And look, Gobert is in my opinion, an impossible situation. And I know everyone's, he's the defensive player of the year. Yeah, he is. And he deserved it because he's done some amazing things defensively. The T-Wolves are a better team with him on the floor defensively. But I'm sorry, as good as he is defensively, it's not because he switches out on Luka Doncic late in a playoff game. Luka is one of the best players in the game. Uh-huh. And I thought the point that Kenny Smith made was exactly right. Luka could have done that tonight.
On anyone.
On Jaden McDaniels.
On anyone.
He's done it in this series on those guys. He's done it on anybody in the NBA because he's that great of a player. So,
and he's that big. He's that big where he can do that over multiple people. You know what I mean? It's like he has a size and a skill set that ultimately is so unique, and it is why he is one of the reasons why he's one of the best players in the league. So yeah, I don't agree with Kenny Smith all the time, but he was absolutely right. And then Draymond went into his weird, like, super I'm going to be petty thing, whatever. And it's like, break down the game
You know the game, please. Break it down. Like, we get you don't like Gobert. But, like, just piling on doesn't totally make sense, in my opinion.
No.
Hell of a shot by Luka, though. And he was just incredible in this game. I do want to rewind, and then we'll kind of get back to some of the Mavs players and what's going on with Minnesota. 47.3 seconds to go. Actually, before that, this is a crazy play going back to Luka. It's 108-103. I thought Minnesota's defense was awesome when Dallas had the ball. Late shot clock. Luka gets doubled. Somehow finds Kyrie in the corner who buries a three.
Yes.
To make it 108-106. That was such a huge possession there and such a big shot by Kyrie, who was really good in the fourth quarter besides the missed free throws.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
But... Morgan, it felt like, is Minnesota about to tie this series? Instead, Luka throws an amazing pass, wind double, late shot clock to the corner. Kyrie buries it 108-106.
You said to me, you said, how the hell does Luka make that pass? And I said, because he's bigger and he can see over people. He not only has the vision, but he has the size. Again, we keep talking about what a unique player he is, and obviously his physical... What would you call them? Not physical skills, physical.
I don't know what blessings. You're trying to
like when someone is just born that way, they're born a big ass person.
Basketball in his DNA, man.
I mean, he does, but like just being able to be that big and to also have that type of basketball IQ, that type of vision, and to be able to make that pass was
with the clock going down, under a minute to go in a game, you're down by five, and just. There's no panic. It was make the right basketball play.
And you mentioned it. Kyrie had just or was missing free throws. He had just missed two in a row. Yep. And it was after, you know, having a great take to the basket after missing those free throws. It was a great way to make up for a lot of those missed free throws.
Yeah, Luka, by the way, finished this game with 13 assists. He had 32 points, 13 assists, 10 rebounds. He was 5 of 11 from 3 in this game, 7-7 for the free throw line. Okay, so after that's 108-106, I'm left going, how did Luka make that play? Yeah. And Kyrie at the big play, three-pointer, late. Then next possession down, McDaniels trapped near the baseline, and the ball gets deflected out of the bounds. The officials say, it's Wolves' ball. The Mavs elect to challenge it. And you're looking at, okay, this is interesting. The replay comes up. Kyrie clearly makes contact with McDaniels, and the ball went out of bounds off of McDaniels. But because of how the rules go in the NBA, the officials can't change the call. They're just looking at, is it off him or off, not off of him? Mm-hmm. Well, it was off of him, and so it was Dallas ball. I hate that. And I think the NBA has to change that rule because it's clear, like, without Kyrie making that contact on McDaniels,
that
that ball does not go out of bounds. That should have been a foul.
Right. I mean, and that's it. It's like because of the foul, because he was getting hit on the arm, the ball went out of bounds off of his fingertips or his hand or whatever. But because someone was coming across his arms, you're exactly right. It just, it feels icky when you see that and you go, well, you as an official missed that call or just didn't make that call. And now you're going back and looking at it and you have to reward the other team that just obviously committed a foul. Yeah, I'm with you.
The officials tonight were interesting because I felt like they let a lot go on both ends. I thought it was a super physical game. There were many times I'm like, that's a foul. That's a foul. Mm-hmm. That's a foul. And they just let them play. That play specifically ends up being Dallas ball. Next possession, Luka actually misses a shot.
Okay.
And the T-Wolves go the other way. That's when Anthony Edwards had the bad turnover where he's got Lively on him. It looked like he wanted to make a move, didn't feel totally comfortable, had to pick up his dribble, try to get it to Naz Reid, threw it out of bounds. Then it's Mavs ball. So in a weird way, yeah, that sucked, but you dodge a bullet because Luka didn't score on the next possession. In fact, you make a mistake on at the end. And then at the very end, after Luka hits the three, I thought the look that Naz Reid got was great. And Naz Reid was awesome in this game. He hit seven threes. That was a great look. It was a good contest, but it was a look that Naz can make, made tonight, came up short.
He was making that three in rhythm tonight. And it felt like that one was in rhythm as well. And like you said, a little bit more contested than some of the open looks that he even had tonight. But he was making 3-point shots contested as well. I mean, he was feeling it. If anything, that was the person that you wanted taking that shot in that moment, even over Ant in that situation. I say that because it felt like Ant was a little bit more passive tonight, not as aggressive. And he was even talking a little bit about that in the locker room after, being like, look, I was trying to make the best play, but maybe sometimes the best play is also me shooting the shot.
And I don't know if it's an overthinking things because it thing with him, because I feel like a lot of times after the game, Anthony Edwards says the right things where you're like, yeah, you notice that, you see it. Mm-hmm. What is that? Why aren't those adjustments not happening yet in game? Part of the reason, the guy's 22 years old. He's seeing defenses like he's never seen before. They're crowding him. They're making life hard. They know he is the guy. And if they can limit him, that means good things. He looks tired out there. Another game where he didn't look as tired, I felt, early in this game. But again, he's walking up the floor at times, settling a little bit. I do feel like he's a little passive. I would say this, one encouraging thing with him tonight, he got to the free throw line.
Sure.
He was 9 of 10 at the free throw line, but 5 of 17 overall shooting.
Well, yeah. And that alone, like, I feel like he is the type of mentality where shoot or shoot, he's going to shoot anyway, even if he's missing, doing whatever. And I know he felt like he was finding the open man. He finished with 7 assists and still doing a great job making the defense collapse on him. But he also had to look for his a little bit more. Charles Barkley just said, and again, I think, I don't know if he knew that this was 100%. He was even saying there were reports that Anthony Edwards was getting oxygen on the side. And he goes, but there were reports. And then, so I don't want to just speculate. I want to make sure we see it before we just go in that direction. But Charles Barkley's sitting there saying this on TNT. And I'm like, shit, Charles, you got to know if this is true or not. And then, but he started going off on a different angle, just being like, you know, he's 22 years old and needing oxygen. Is something wrong? Like, what? He is tired.
This is a deep playoff run for him too. We just play a 7-game series. I mean, if you need oxygen, you would. I don't even know if that's true, but here's what I do know: the elevation in Denver, the last series he played was 5,280 feet.
Oxygen.
So, yeah, I mean, last 3 games for him: 5 of 17, 6 of 16, and then going back to that game 7, 6 of 24. Not shooting the ball well. I still think there are moments where he's doing good things, setting up his teammates, getting them good looks. I want him to remain aggressive. Don't always look to pass. Like, you can go and take it to the rim and attack. And don't be afraid to attack their bigs sometimes. I that's what I would say with Anthony Edwards. But this is a learning experience. And I think part of this, you know, sometimes we get caught up in the whole, like, narratives that get built, whether it's on the ESPN talk shows or on social media, where people are going, oh, he's like Michael Jordan. Well, breaking news, Anthony Edwards did not come out and say, I'm going to be the next Michael Jordan. I'm Michael Jordan now. I'm better than him. Like, he didn't say any of this stuff. Mm-hmm. This is a young man in the league that is playing in the conference finals for the first time, and he's learning. And I think this experience is just going to make him better in the long run. You have to go through these things in the playoffs sometimes. And, you know, on the other hand, I'm looking at this. Look, they're two best players, Anthony Edwards and Karl-Anthony Towns. Uh-huh. Have played like dog shit the last two games.
Sure.
They barely lost. Like, they're not getting blown out. They had a chance to win tonight when these guys aren't as efficient. Hell, Cat only played 12 minutes in the second half. He played 3 minutes in the fourth quarter. He was bad defensively. He was not good offensively. 4 of 16 in this game. So, like, if there was some positive spin from a Minnesota standpoint, it's, yes, we are down 0-2. Mm-hmm. Yes, we lost two games at home. But we've won tough games on the road before. We won in Denver. We won a game 7 there. We won the first two games there.
Yeah.
We can go win on the road. We just have to be better. I think that's, they've been in these games with those guys struggling.
Your late game execution alone, if you're the T-Wolves, has to be so much better. And I think that's what you're looking at when you look at these, when you look at these last couple of games. You're looking, sure, you're looking at your guys doing better, doing more, but how many times have we talked about,
You're up by five.
How many times have we talked about and how many times have we seen that these teams that are left, when they play like a full team, when they go down the roster and everyone is contributing, even if sometimes your stars aren't having the biggest games, but everyone is contributing, it can be this great team win. And I feel like Minnesota keeps wanting to go in that direction, but then their stars aren't stepping up in executing late in games. Cap wasn't even on the floor because he couldn't execute. He couldn't do what Chris Finch wanted him to do. And that alone is so telling. And I know you can feel that type of energy from your team and from those players.
And I'm of the opinion, I haven't heard Chris Finch talk yet, Karl-Anthony Towns wasn't on the floor because he was 4-16. It was because of the defensive breakdowns, the help defense not being there, allowing too many dunks from Gafford and Lively, who I think combined for 77 dunks in this game.
Yes.
I'm obviously exaggerating. Too many defensive breakdowns. He holds them to a higher standard defensively. And we've seen Cat be more engaged and locked in defensively. There are a lot of miscommunications with this Minnesota defense at times. Him being 4-16 is obviously not good, but I think they trust that he can get that going. It's the defense more than anything.
And you mentioned that to me too. You were talking about how these two bigs in Gobert and Cat compared to Mavs two bigs in Lively and Gafford.
I'm glad you brought this up. Let's just go from a pure number standpoint, okay?
Please.
Gafford and Lively in this game, and they've been really good the first two games. Game two tonight, they combined for 30 points, 15 rebounds, 5 blocks. Mm-hmm. They got the 30 points on 14 of 16 shooting, missed two shots. Rudy and Cat combined for 31, but did it on 10 of 26 shooting. 10 of 26 shooting. They missed 16 shots. They had 17 rebounds, two more, and they combined for one block.
And when you look at that, at first when you started talking to me about these numbers and about that, I'm like, yeah, like, isn't that fine? And you're like, Morgan, look at the names. Look at who these guys are. I mean, Cat and Gobert, Defensive Player of the Year, and Cat
All-Star,
having the type of year that he is having and the type of maturity and growth that he has shown mentally and physically on the court, and then to not be able to do that in the postseason. He's not that young anymore where it's like, oh, he's never, you know, I get if you say experience and not being here, I completely understand that, but he's been in the league and he knows what it takes. And he's taken so many steps, so many leaps, and for him not to do it in the postseason and to allow the other bigs on the other side, a rookie, and then Daniel Gafford, who gets traded over there at the trade deadline, it's just, it feels, it doesn't feel right.
The energy that the Dallas Bigs have brought, that tandem is just fun. Gafford played 21 minutes in this game, 16 points, 5 rebounds, 5 blocks. Tremendous. And then Lively, a rookie, plays 27 minutes, 14 points, 9 rebounds, 2 assists. their rim protection has been outstanding. And it's not just them, you know, tonight Gafford had the five blocks. Their ability to contest, their ability to make Minnesota think on drives.
Yes.
Their rotations have been so good. I've been beyond impressed with both these guys. And for Lively as a rookie to get this type of experience as a young player, their jobs offensively are pretty simple.
Sure.
Hey, Luka and Kyrie are going to get you open shots. They're going to throw you lobs. Get ready to get some offensive rebounds, clean up, and dunk the goddamn ball. But it's what they have done defensively that's been eye-popping.
And let me give some love to then to the perimeter defense that can always help the second line of defense, right? And that goes to Derek Jones Jr., PJ Washington, Kyrie Irving.
Yeah, like, those guys.
Those three alone in the way that they have stepped up their perimeter defense to help out even Lively and Gafford when they do have to pick up the slack or when they do have to protect the rim and or come over, help, and contest. It's just really all come together in so many different ways. Toward the end of this regular season and now in the postseason.
Also, shout out to Josh Green. I thought Josh Green had some good minutes tonight, especially defensively. He played 21 minutes. I know there's nothing that jumps out to you on the stat sheet. I had 6 rebounds, 5 points, whatever. But I felt like he was super engaged, had some moments switched on Ant, and I thought he made him work and did some nice things, had some good energy out there. Dallas's defense is locked in right now. And for them to do what they have done the last couple of games is pretty impressive. Now, there's still work to be done. You still have to win 2 more games. You can't have a letdown, right? You don't want to give Minnesota any life. And I think Minnesota can play better, but God, 2 leads at home and you lost those games. Luka, for a second, it is worth acknowledging, like, his knee is bugging him. He's leaving the game, going to the locker room. I'd love to know what the hell they're doing in the locker room with him.
You don't want
to
know.
Because he comes back in, and for him to be this productive in the shot making, when contested, the passing, the all-around game, this is like legendary stuff he is doing right now while being banged up.
There's been times throughout the last couple of seasons when I'm watching him play, I am like just not impressed. I am just like, what is this guy doing? He's letting everyone get into his head. He's so much better than this. And he's out of shape, all the things. And I just feel like this last year, but then all, especially the last part of the regular season, now into the postseason, not only is he playing some of his best basketball, but best like leader basketball. Like, he is showing by example. He is not hanging his head and bitching after every single play. Like, he's an emotional guy and he's going to remain emotional forever. But I think he's done a great job of channeling that in such a much more positive way. And then you talk about him being all beaten up, Deuce. It's got to be inspirational to some of these teammates for him to be able to fight through it. I mean, you saw Kyrie talking to Ali LaForce after the game with so much joy, talking about Naz Reid's open three and being like, oh, coach is going to be on us for that. I mean, man, he had such too good of a look. But then talking about this is what playoffs is all about, so fun, and Luka being able to carry us. You know, when you hear that from one of your other best players, Luka is carrying you when he had how many field goals in the fourth quarter? I don't know the exact number. But
I think the one shot he made was the end. Yeah, he was one of three because that's when because then Kyrie got it going. Kyrie in the fourth quarter had 13 points on 4 of 5 shooting. Gafford was 3 of 3. And then Luka was 1 of 3. He was 2 of 2 at the free throw line.
So it was the biggest shot, but it wasn't just his shot. It wasn't just that shot, Luka carrying them. It was what he was able to do throughout him being all beaten up and everything and getting everyone involved.
He had 5 assists the fourth quarter.
There you go.
Kyrie had 3 assists.
Wow.
So those guys combined for 8 assists in the fourth quarter. Dallas outscored them 30-22 in that quarter. And I think in the second half, I want to double check this just for fun. Second half, 61-48 Dallas. Dallas in the second half shot 60%. They were 8 of 17 from three. They had 26 points in the second half, 13 of 19 in the paint. So a big time second half for them. And now they head home pumped up, 2 wins away from trying to get to the NBA Finals. Luka's first NBA Finals appearance. It's so close,
it's
but
close.
You know, it's so far. Minnesota, they're a good team. Can they respond? That's the other thing. Like Jaden McDaniels, who had the string of 20-point games, he had 2 points in this game. Right? 2 points, he's 1 of 6. So they got some good things from Naz Reid, who I that the shot making from him tonight.
Incredible.
Get some good looks, but he had a nice drive late for a jam that I thought was really nice. I thought Conley was really good. It was good to see him be aggressive and take it upon himself to, like, I got to go get some buckets in there tonight. But they need Ant and Cat to be better, and it's as simple as that. Can those guys get it together and make this a series again? It's going to be tough.
I know.
It's going to be tough.
I want to see it, though. I want to see this series keep grinding it out. Like, the last two games, they've had to grind it out all the way to the end where you're just like, oh, my God.
Well, they were on the reverse end of this last series, right? They go to Denver, won the first two, and then Denver went there and answered.
Yep.
And so it's not easy.
This is fun.
But this is, it's going to be interesting to see.
We will definitely keep you updated on anything that happens. Of course, we are dropping content left and right on our YouTube page too, youtube.com/@DeuceAndMo. We love you guys, but we got to go.
See ya.
Deuce and Mo. They tell you what they know. Deuce and Mo. Deuce and Mo, the podcast that you know. Deuce and Mo.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medella is your reward. Medella, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Driving plays a big part in driving the local economy. It helps us all get where we're going and creates good jobs close to home. At Cenovus Energy, our refineries in Toledo and Lima are a reliable domestic source of gasoline, diesel, and jet fuel. Plus, more than 2,300 employees and contractors work for us here in Ohio. See how we're helping local communities move forward at cenovus.com.
Menards is your electrical headquarters. We carry all the tools and testers you need for any electrical job. Stack up your toolbox with Southwire electrical products today. Right now, save big money on Southwire electrical tools, testers, cable ties, wire, and cable. Shop our huge selection in-store at Menards. Ranked number one in customer satisfaction among home improvement retailers according to J.D. Power. For more information, visit jdpower.com/awards.
Save big money.